Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
We are back for a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Football Tuesday here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. We did not talk about the NFL draft on the show yesterday. We were saving it for a special day. Today, Football Tuesday. We got Vinny Rondinelli back in the studio. Vinny is fresh out of Nashville. You were at the draft this past weekend. How was it?
It was incredible. So the number was on the internet was 600,000 people were there.
That's ridiculous.
The highest, it was the most.
Times three. The highest attended draft times three.
And there were stages everywhere. I was right in front of the main stage. I had ABC and Herb Street and the boys right behind me. It was incredible. It was an awesome atmosphere. And we got to do it.
Next year we're doing this. Next year in Vegas. We got to be there next year in Vegas. The NFL does a great job of making it an event. It's a three-day event now, and that's what we are going to talk about on the show today. Specifically, the New York Giants. It was one of the three or four teams that I think we focused on heavily leading up to the draft because they had draft capital, right? They had multiple picks, kind of controlled the way the draft could go. The Giants did throw out a shocker going with Daniel Jones at number six. Dave Gettleman says this is his guy. He's been slammed in the media, and it is amplified because it's New York. If this was Jacksonville or if this was Tampa Bay, it probably floats under the radar a little bit more.
I'm sure.
The Raiders and the Giants were under extreme scrutiny, and really the national media slammed both. And you and I will talk about this. I can defend both picks.
Absolutely.
I can defend both.
No, absolutely.
And so that's probably the route I will go because I don't see a problem with it. I think the Giants had a great draft. I think the Redskins had a great draft. I think the Eagles had a great draft. I thought the NFC East in general was very, very good. You look at some of these guys that I was high on that dropped. I mean, Dillard goes to the Eagles at what, 22?
22, yeah. They traded up, and they needed a player.
They did.
And they needed, and he was the best player at the position of need. Because, you know, you hear it all the time, just best available player, Jordan. And we both think that's bupkis half the time.
Yeah.
If you you have six running backs in your roster, you're not drafting another one.
No, it just
doesn't work that way. And GMs blow smoke all the time and say that. Well, he was just top-rated player on our board. That's BS. So, a player in need. So, our teams, we both love our team's draft.
I was fine with what the Rams did. You should be ecstatic at the Chargers.
I love the Chargers draft. Yeah. But again, like my hero Tommy Telesco of the Chargers, he said, he goes, you know, everybody in the NFL right now is ecstatic. Every team feels great. They all think they hit a home run. He said, so in a couple of years, we'll look back at this and see some of these guys are still here or some of them are not still here. And, you know, let's be honest, Jordan, if you're hitting 55 to 60% of your draft picks, you're killing it.
Yeah.
You are absolutely killing it.
I got to be honest. There's one team that I don't think should feel happy about the way the draft went at all. The Detroit Lions should not be happy with the way that draft went.
Why not?
Okay, so TJ Hockenson, first off, I don't mind the pick, but this marks the third time in the last decade that this team has drafted a tight end in the opening round. Think about that. Three times in the
last
But
you're looking at a different regime now.
You are looking at, you know. And it's Bob Quinn.
Bob Quinn and Matty P. So they're looking at something different. And Stafford needed one. That's a position in need.
Yeah, Stafford. I always talk about protecting the asset. And that's exactly what they did. I hated the second round pick with the Jelani Tavai, I believe is his last. I had to actually get my book out and look up who that was. And I have done a lot of draft research, Vinny. A kid coming out of Hawaii, the inside linebacker. Will Harris in the third round out of Boston College. I have a problem with that pick, especially when you got a guy like Rapp that's still on the board at that particular time. I don't know. I was not happy with
Detroit.
Well,
you know, they
draft.
Do things differently there.
They do.
You know, this is a guy that learned from New England, and they always do things very differently, and they grade people differently. So you got to... I don't know. I agree. Matty P knows what he's looking for, especially defensively. I think
every team knows what they're looking for.
They're they know what they're looking for, and I think those guys look for something a little different. It's very, very specific what, you know, let's just use the term, what a Patriot player looks like, and that's what they're looking for in Detroit. You know, it's a culture change and a scheme change. So they're looking for something different. So I don't know that I hate it as much as you do.
I didn't like it at all.
I don't think most people understand it. And again, with New England, a lot of people don't most years. You look at New England's draft and you're like, well, what is that? So it's hard to argue with the results, though. Bob Quinn learned from a master. So let's, I don't know. The linebacker pick was shocking. It was, because a lot of people were like thinking, wait a minute, he's definitely going to be there later. But if you see something in your that you want in your scheme that he's got, that's your guy.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe a little early in round two, like we talked on the air, you know, the clumps of players are different.
Yeah, you know, because I look at a team like the Cardinals. The Cardinals got their guys. And really, when I take a look at what the Cardinals did in the second round, I love the Byron Murphy pick.
I love the Deontay Thompson pick in round five.
I thought the Cardinals did great. I really did.
So, again, we're going to be looking at this in 3 years. And the coolest part is we'll look back in 3 years.
And laugh at some of the picks.
And laugh at some of the things we were just laughing. Like, I love this kid. What happened to this kid? This was our guy.
Yeah.
And so we're going to find out because, again, hey, I was live for the 60th pick. I saw him announce a Chargers pick. And that was a kid I was hoping would be there at 28. And then they got him at 60. So yeah. I was a little far off on that.
Yeah.
So it's a great time, though. And the draft's becoming more scientific. They're getting better. And
it is.
You're not seeing as many complete whiffs as you used to.
No. They're for a while. I mean, it was pretty common to see complete whiffs.
Common. And you're seeing guys now, even if they don't hit a home run, some of these guys mingle in the NFL.
For quite a while.
Right? Yeah. They stand out, even if they're first-rounders. Are still kind of around.
Mm-hmm.
So they got it down to a science, I will say that. And the NFL has it down to a science because that was a well-run event, Jordan.
Well, let's talk about some of the other news and notes coming out of the NFL. The Indianapolis Colts have signed Spencer Ware today. There is a long list of free agents that are still out there now that the NFL draft has passed. And you and I have talked about the date, May 7th. That's probably when you're going to see some of these names come off the board. But I actually like this deal for the Colts and going out and getting Spencer Ware because I love Marlon Mack. You want to talk about a complimentary piece?
Yes.
I think Spencer Ware is going to spell that perfectly.
Yeah, bigger, stronger guy. They have the Hines kid, too, who's a lot smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So you have three... Actually, totally different backs there, and I like that. I like the diversity there. Frank Reich's a creative guy.
Yeah, he is. Some of the other big names that are still out there, Ziggy Ansah, still a free agent, Eric Berry, Ndamukong Suh, Michael Crabtree, Jamie Collins, Trey Boston. Jay Ajayi is still a free agent as well. So you see some of these running back names come off the board. Derek Morgan, Muhammad Wilkerson, Shane Ray. I mean, there's still some talent out there.
There's still definitely talent. And you wonder if a lot of these guys make it to training camp, Jordan, and wait for an injury to come in.
Yeah.
You know, maybe some of these guys are sitting there waiting. They're still in shape. You have an injury in the D-line. They call Sue and Wilkerson. Hey, what are you going to play for? Because the price tag is going down. Make no mistake. The price tag is going down.
Yep, every day.
So these guys at this point are sweating it out after the draft going, okay, well, these teams that took defensive tackles, so take them off my list. So what do I have left?
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting for an injury. So the price tag is going down. And I think the May 7th thing, now that the draft is settled, you look at your roster, your depth chart, you have your OTAs and a mini camp. So I think the coaches and the scouts and everybody's zoomed in on that. And then in a couple weeks, they say, okay, we had our mini camp. This is where we think we could probably improve. And that's where maybe these veterans start getting calls to say, hey, what's your price range?
One player that I'm sad to say goodbye to today, Jamaal Charles announces his retirement from the NFL. Now, you being an AFC West guy, you probably have a
dynamic
few memories
player,
of Jamaal Charles. 11 seasons, signed a one-day contract with the Kansas City Chiefs, wanted to retire with the franchise. 32 years old, plays 9 seasons. And for those who maybe have forgotten, because sports is such a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal, Jamaal Charles retires. He has the largest yards per carry average in NFL history for the minimum of 1,000 attempts. At best, Jim Brown. At best, Barry Sanders. That's how dynamic Jamaal
Charles
was.
Yeah, he was dynamic.
He was fantastic, and he ran into some really, really bad luck. I mean, he's a couple of ACLs away from, in my mind, going into Canton.
He could have been close to a Canton player.
I think he would have been.
Healthy,
really
that guy, if he plays a decade, Jordan, you're looking at a guy that's going to Canton.
Yeah, because he finishes with 7,500 yards. in 9 seasons, and how many was he healthy for?
3 or 4.
You know, and again, he averaged 5.5 yards per carry.
And I saw live and in color how many times he would have 10 carries for 5 yards or 10 carries for 20 yards. That was it. And you said, we got him. And then, boom, 75 yards later, you're going, he just went 75 yards. This guy could take it to the house every time he touched the ball. And I seen him do it.
And he was a likable guy.
Likeable and a good – he was a good, solid football player. When he was healthy, he was dynamic. Yep. He really was. And I've seen him take it to the house more than once live and in color, watching him twice a year when they play the Chargers. He took it to the house more than once where I thought, well, you had him.
Yeah.
That was it. You had him for a 5-yard loss. How did he get 55 yards out of that?
Guy could play.
The guy could play.
And in a fantasy, he could catch.
Yeah.
And for those who love fantasy football, you're well familiar with Jamaal Charles.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was a fantasy football player's dream, but he has hung it up after 11 years. Let's take a look, 9 years, excuse me. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. We get game 2, Boston at Milwaukee. It's a big game for the Bucks tonight. They already trail 1-0 in the series after being manhandled by Kyrie Irving in game number 1. And then in the nightcap, 8:30 tip-off, Houston at Golden State. Vinny, I don't know if it's because it's we have social media and we have so much more media coverage, but I am so sick and tired of athletes complaining about the officiating.
Yeah.
And that has kind of been the story plaguing the Rockets-Golden State series, where you have nothing but players in front offices now complaining about the officiating. And this is the one that gets me. People, when talking about it, the guy that says, so we're just okay with mediocre officiating. These are the best referees
in the world. And they've been doing it for decades.
Yes.
NBA officials are famous for their longevity. I mean, some of these guys have been doing it for decades. They don't just forget.
No.
And a lot of these are subjective calls. You see it in basketball, too, when you're going up for these... plays, they're subjective calls. It's not that physical of a sport. So it's not like these guys are getting knocked down.
Right.
So, yeah, that's just whining.
It is. We're starting to see it more over the course of every sport except for baseball. Baseball seems to be the only sport where I'm not constantly seeing people complain about the officiating.
And that's true. That's very true. And with baseball,
and it may be the most difficult because you're standing behind a catcher trying to call balls and strikes
at 100 miles an hour or 90 miles an hour
in an imaginary strike zone. Right.
In an imaginary strike zone.
It doesn't exist. There's no box. We see a box on TV.
There's no box
for these umpires. Yeah. And people never complain about the baseball officiating, but boy, we hear it a lot when it comes to basketball and a lot when it comes to football. And I have to believe that it has everything to do with the media availability. I'm not saying that baseball players aren't made available, but it seems like football players and basketball players, they spend more time in the media. The face of Major League Baseball right now is Mike Trout, and the commissioner of Major League Baseball comes out and complains that Trout isn't doing enough to market himself. Right? You don't have that issue. Roger Goodell's never stepped up and said, well, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, they need to do a little bit more out there in the public to promote the game. You don't see Silver stepping up and saying this about LeBron James. You see Rob Manfred say this about Mike Trout. And I'm not going to correlate that one issue to it all, but what I'm saying is MLB just does not seem as if they're in the media as much as the NFL and the
NBA. That's true.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I believe you and I agree with you. Especially the NFL, they have made it a brand now it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. It's on everywhere.
And NBA is global.
And NBA is, basketball is more global than football, but the NFL is a giant.
That is.
It really is. I mean, look at this draft. Was it on 3 channels?
Yeah.
Pick your poison. Three different crews covering this.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. So, But I'm with you. Just play the game.
Just stop.
Play the game. And nobody wants to hear it. The fans don't want to hear it.
I don't think they do.
They don't want to hear it.
I don't think they do. I know Jazz fans don't want to hear it because coming from the Houston Rockets, hearing James Harden sit at the podium and complain about the officiating makes Jazz fans sick to their stomach after what they just watched in the opening round. Right, we're talking about the guy that spends more time at the foul line than any player basically in this modern era, and he's complaining about the officiating?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
Let's move over to Major League Baseball. Full slate of games, 5 o'clock hour tonight. St. Louis on the road to take on Washington. The Phillies will host the Tigers in an interleague matchup. Cincinnati at the Mets, 5 o'clock hour. Oakland at Boston. Miami plays host to Cleveland. We get the Padres at the Braves. The Rockies at Milwaukee. And the Twins take on the Astros. Told you we had a full slate. 6:05, Pittsburgh at the Rangers. 7 o'clock hour tonight, Yankees, Diamondbacks, CC Sabathia against Zach Greinke. Tonight, the Dodgers will look to rebound from a loss last night against the Giants. Walker Buehler goes up against Drew Pomeranz. Toronto, we get the Angels Toronto travels to meet the Angels tonight. And then in the nightcap, it is the Cubbies at Seattle. Cole Hamels will take on King Felix Hernandez. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports front. It is Football Tuesday. Of course, we'll mix in some local sports. We will talk about the New York Giants today as well. Daniel Jones, is he the guy? We'll discuss that coming up here in just a bit. It's a Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. USU Eastern Rodeo squads Casey Thomas and Morgan Jensen have qualified for this summer's College National Finals Rodeo. Both competitors have qualified earlier in the month at the final rodeo competition of the 2019 Intercollegiate Rodeo season, which took place in Grand Junction, Colorado. Thomas will compete in the team roping header event at Nationals with his partner Caleb Hendricks of Utah Valley University. He beat out 60 other teams in the region to qualify for the event. Thomas is currently ranked number one in the nation. Jensen is ranked seventh in the country overall and took third this season in barrel racing. She beat out 75 other competitors from the 11 schools in the region to earn a spot at the competition in June. The finals competition consists of three long rounds with all the qualifiers competing. After those rounds, the top 10 competitors, based on regular season and long round points, will compete in the championship round. The College National Finals Rodeo will take place June 8th through June 15th in Casper, Wyoming. For more information on the USU Eastern Rodeo team, visit CastleCountryRadio.com. We move over to high school track and field, and this past Saturday, the Carbon Dinos traveled to San Juan High School in Blanding to participate in the Eastern Utah Championship, and overall, it was a stellar afternoon for Carbon High School. The boys team accumulated 187 points, easily grabbing the first place finish, topping second place Uinta, who finished with 148 points. Grand finished in third with 88, followed by Monticello in fourth and San Juan in fifth. Monument Valley, Pinnacle, Whitehorse, and Green River rounded out the field of nine on the boys' side. The Carbon Lady Dinos also had a successful afternoon. They accumulated 211 points as they topped Uinta, who finished with 161. Grand was in third with 74 points, followed by San Juan in fourth, and Monticello in fifth. Whitehorse, Monument Valley, and Pinnacle rounded out the field of eight. With the Eastern Utah Championships now in the past, the Dinos will prepare for the BYU Invite, which will take place on Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. Following this weekend's set, Carbon will then participate in the region championship in JUAB, which is just 9 days before the state championship at Brigham Young University on May 17th and 18th. Later this week on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we will be joined by track and field coach Jimmy Jukes to recap the weekend to talk about what lies ahead for the Dinos. And we end by moving over to high school basketball. Yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, it was announced by USU Eastern Assistant Men's Basketball Coach Curtis Condi that next year, the opening round of the 3A State Championship Tournament will take place at the BDAC in Price.
How they're doing the state playoffs next year, everybody makes it. So the first round games will be at home sites. Some people will get byes. But when you get to the second round, which used to be what was called the play-in games or so forth, those games for the last couple of years were either at Wasatch High School or at Orem High School. But for the 2019-2020 season, this upcoming season, they will be here in Price, February 14th and 15th.
Traditionally held at either Wasatch High School or Orem High School, the opening round of the 3A state tournament is a neutral site for 16 schools. With the new 3A classification, the play-in round will actually serve as the second round of the tournament, but it will be held at the BDAC in Price. You can listen to the complete interview with USU Eastern Assistant Coach Curtis Condi, who has teamed up with USU Eastern's Greg Dart and also Athletic Director Scott Madsen to bring the tournament to Price. You can listen to that complete interview at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We'll talk track and field on this edition of the Coach's Corner. We're heading to the home stretch of the spring sports schedule. In fact, this weekend we have state baseball. State tournament's actually going to begin on Saturday. Three meets remaining for the track and field season. The Carbon Dinos recently, this past weekend, participating in the Eastern Utah Championship. Stellar performance for the Dinos, picking up first place on both the boys and the girls' side of the track. They take control of the traveling trophies, and joining us right now to talk about that, we have Coach Jimmy Jukes over the phone right now. Coach, thank you for taking out the time today.
Oh, no, thanks for having me on, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Definitely, Coach. It's always a lot more fun to talk when we have a lot of success to break down, and that's exactly what we have today. And over the weekend, the kids performed beautifully at the Eastern Utah Championships, both the boys and the girls coming out on top, really in landslide fashion. And, Coach, I want to start by talking about the boys, because it was about 2 to 3 weeks ago you were on the show, and you were talking to me about the boys actually having an easier path, at least in your mind, to win the region championship, because you saw a level of potential in this team. And so I guess the first question is, Coach, did they reach that level of potential at the Eastern Utah Championships by taking home first place?
Yeah, well, they did. They totally did. You know, you look at that and the ability that they had to get great performances. You know, I think our distance program, our distance team scored 72 points at that meet, and they can do that in certain meets. And there's nothing that says they won't be able to do that at the region level as well. I mean, we had kids that just stepped up and had performance after performance at that meet on the boys' side. And we've kind of been, you know, telling the boys, hey, you just got to wait. You got to wait till the right meet comes along, and you guys are going to see success. And we finally saw that.
We'll talk about the sprint medley team here for a moment, Coach, because they take home first place. Jalen Dennis, Jacob Jukes, Carson Frame, and Jared Spendlove. Those are four kids that we'll be talking a lot about, I know, if we kind of break down everything that happened at this particular meet. I think you're going to be hard-pressed to find four better athletes from any school in the 3A classification teaming up, and they take home first place in the sprint medley.
Yeah, they did. You know, they ran a great medley. We needed them to do that, and they ran a state qualifying time, so they qualified for state. So, and I think right now they're sitting third at state with that time in 3A. And, you know, Jared Spindle has been there all year. He's ran a great 800s for us. You know, Jacob Jukes has done everything in his power to help us out. And you look at Jalen and Carson, and those guys are, I mean, they're helping our team out. And really those four athletes on this team are really big for us.
Coach, some of those other athletes in other events, I mean, as I mentioned, we're going to talk a lot about those four, but another one that we didn't mention is Riker Childs as well.
Yeah, Riker Childs, I mean, that kid is getting faster for being a freshman and running the times he's running in the hurdles. I don't think he even understands how special he is. I mean, he qualified for state in the 110s, and he ran a heck of a 300 hurdle race, just about won that one as well. And I'm really excited to see what he does at BYU on the grand scale this weekend.
Now, I want to go back to, again, the point that you made a few weeks ago, that this team probably has an easier route to get to the region championship than the girls. Coach, I kind of want you to revisit that thought, and why is that?
It's because our distance program is so good. Our distance program is really good, and then we've got enough in all the other events. We got kids stepping up left and right on that boys' side. You know, we're deep, and so we have, you know, from Riker Childs to Riddick Migliori in the shot put. You know, Jalen Dennis is stepping up big time. You know, Carson Frame is multidimensional, and we can put him in all kinds of stuff. And then our distance program, again, that's what it comes down to. And then you got Mike Banaski and in the javelin that helps us out, and so we are deep in every event, and we can score in every event, and that's what it comes down to, region. And I think in our region that bodes well for our boys
scoring with depth. I mean, the 3200 meters and the long distances you were just talking about at the Eastern Utah Championships, a second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth place finish. I mean, that's how you score points in track and field.
Oh, yeah, that's how you do it. You know, you got to pack it in. You know, Rob Pell, our my assistant coach, our distance coach, says we're like Costco. We score points in bulk, and we really do that.
Well, if we flip over to the girls' side, Coach, I know you guys did score a lot of points in bulk there as well, and it shouldn't be a surprise that you guys come home with the Eastern Utah Championship on the girls' side, because they've had a lot of success throughout the entire season. I mean, it's not something that has come as of late. We've seen the girls maybe even outperform expectations a time or two so far this season.
Right. You know, I mean, we went down there expected our girls to perform well. I don't think we expected them to perform quite as well as we got out of them. They stepped up even bigger. And, I mean, we had our medley team, the girls' medley team, they started off the meet and qualified for state and ran the second fastest time in 3A in the state this year. And it's actually one of the fastest medley times in the state overall, 1A through 6A. And so to see them do that, that was awesome. McKenna Blank had an awesome 800 on that. And then, you know, we loaded that because we knew we could do it. You know, we had Grace Broadbear run a great 400, and Lindy Bauer ran a great 100, and we had Peyton Thomas run a great 100, and so it's our great 200s, and that's what you need. You need all these kids to step up, and we've had some great performances this year out of that group of girls. That meet for the girls was big because we had all three of our girl long jumpers qualified for state, which we knew we could get that going into this meet, and we got those three qualified, which was awesome for us. And so the meet was good because we scored points, but it was also good because we got a lot of state qualifiers out of it.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. Coach, again, you mentioned state qualifiers as we get down to it. The next time this team participates, we're going to be in the month of May, which means only three more opportunities, including the state championship, to see these kids perform on the on the track and field events. What does that mean as far as state qualifiers go with two more meets before we get to that state championship?
Yeah, BYU this weekend's a big one. I mean, I think there's 136 schools going to be at the meet on the weekend. We've got our BYU roster in, so we're just waiting to see if they all get in and get approved. And then we need those kids to step up. You know, I'm looking at Riker Childs. I think he's got a good shot of qualifying in the 300 hurdles. You got Carson Freeman, the 110 hurdles. I think he can qualify for state there. We just need these kids to go in and just get that much faster and perform that much better. And at that grand scale, when you're talking, thousands of people watching you run on a track, it doesn't get any bigger than that. And then we got to turn around and keep that energy and make that flow right into region next week at JUAB. And that's where, the challenge comes in is, you want to win region, but you also need to qualify as many kids for state to give yourself that opportunity to win a state title.
You mentioned the amount of people that will be watching the BYU invite on May 3rd and 4th, and then you go to the region championship at JUAB, and it's going to be a little bit different, I guess, from the size and the amount of spectators. Coach, do you worry about a letdown at all participating in something like, participating somewhere like BYU, I should say, and then going into region?
Yeah, it's a little bit nerve-wracking because you get the kids, you're going to get great performances out of them when they're, in that kind of a venue. And then you get back to region and you got to keep them motivated, to keep them up to be able to continue to have great performances at region. And this team's been really good at being motivated and positive. We've had some, bad things happen throughout meets, and they've just shaken it off and gone to the next event and just been able to do the next performance even better. And so that's what it comes down to. We've got to just get these kids all ready and excited to step up, and we're going to have things that happen along the way that aren't going to go our way, but so are other teams, and so we've just got to keep them moving in the right direction and be like, okay, that happened, shake it off, we got to go to the next thing, because it's all about every single person on this team has got to contribute for us to have success.
As this team, both boys and girls, Coach, progressed to your liking, if we were going to, I guess if we could look back to March 9th, Red Rocks Invitational, and you and I are having a conversation, this team's where they're at today, would you be happy with that?
Oh, I'd be ecstatic, actually, with this group. I think this group has progressed way well this year. And, I don't know if it's going to translate into a region title this year. It might translate into a state title. I don't know. But I know that next year it sets us up for even better success because we're gaining a lot in these younger kids. And so the region change next year is going to be huge for us. And so I'm excited about the future of this program.
On the injury front, Coach, I know that there were some nagging injuries early on in the season. In fact, the last time I met with you, we were just talking about some injuries. How does the team look on that front?
We still have a few issues. We've got Emma Christensen's been battling a sprained ankle, and we've got Harley Migliori with a knee injury. Right now, we're hoping to have her back by region. That's our hope. She has already qualified for state in the shot put. So I'm pretty sure we'll have her for state. It's just whether we're going to have her for region or not. And so we got a few injuries, but nothing that's been too devastating as of yet, which is good. And we just got a lot of sore muscles, and we're starting to back off the kids and let them heal up. And so we're looking for those performances. But as far as that goes this year, it's been a relatively good year for us.
You know, I know that track and field is so much different than any other sport, Coach. And when we talk about the injuries, for those who maybe aren't too familiar with the track and field scheme, how it works out moving forward, those early qualifiers can be huge for a kid that suffers an injury. I know in basketball, you lose a game at the beginning of the season. You're injury plagued a little bit. You get a kid back at the end of the year and everything is great. If you miss out on a qualifier due to an injury, I mean, you could not go to state. So those early qualifiers, I guess, pay dividends when you talk about injuries late in the season.
Right. And for Harley, it was lucky that she had already had that shot put, qualified for state in an early season meet. And so, it's going to affect her. I mean, we probably won't hurdle her anymore this year because of that injury. But at least she's still got some momentum. But, yeah, you lose a kid early in the season for an injury, and it could be the end of their season, even if they do come back, because, you know, it takes a little bit to rebound from that. And then you lose those opportunities. You know, you never know if the track meet you're going to is going to have good weather, if it's going to be a great day to throw or a great day to run. And so it's kind of hard, you know, making sure you get to those meets that are optimal for you to compete.
Coach Jimmy Jukes again joining us over the phone right now. Coach, again, BYU invite this weekend, Friday and Saturday, correct?
Yeah, it's Friday and Saturday, and it is a lot of fun. We've got, I think we've got about 40 kids going up to this meet. We've got participants across the board, and, you know, I'm looking forward to see what our kids do.
Well, Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on the phone. Thank you so much once again for the time. Best of luck this weekend, and I know we'll be talking real soon with the region championship right around the corner.
Yep, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Again, that's Coach Jim Jukes of the Carbon Dino Track and Field Squad. We've got a break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to move over to talk NFL football, winners and losers from the draft this past weekend, plus Daniel Jones and the New York Giants. Is it a seamless fit? We'll talk about that when we return. Football Tuesday will pick up in just a moment right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
With the sixth pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Daniel Jones.
Coming in, I didn't have a whole lot of expectations. I was just excited for the opportunity to be here, and however it worked out, I'd be excited. But I'm thrilled to be part of the Giants. I'm looking forward to getting started.
Roger Goodell making the announcement of Daniel Jones coming off the board at number 6. And then Daniel Jones talking about the excitement of being the next quarterback for the New York Giants. Vinny, Gettleman has been torn to pieces over this pick. And maybe I'm a contrarian here, and I'm not trying to be, right? Because I'm not falling in line with the rest of the national media and slamming the New York Giants. When I look at three picks that stand out to me, first off, you get Daniel Jones at 6. Was it a reach? Gettleman loves him for a reason.
Yeah.
And Gettleman, we'll get to the clip in just a moment. He says, in fact, let's play it right now. This is Dave Gettleman and the reason why he went with Daniel Jones.
When we got in here Friday night, the question was posed, you know, why didn't you wait until 17? Well, I know for a fact there were two teams that would have taken him in front of 17. I know that for a fact. It wasn't easy for me to pass up Josh Allen. You know, that for me, you know, in my background, that was very, very difficult. But I think that much of Daniel Jones and his future as an NFL quarterback.
So, Vinny, he says that multiple teams had their eye on Jones. Okay, we read a lot. We have draft analyzers come on the show. At the end of the day, we don't know what all the talk is around the league. And Gettleman seemed pretty convinced that if they didn't take him at 6, he wouldn't be available at 17.
Well, and those guys know each other. Gettleman's been in the NFL for decades.
And he's got a proven track record.
Yeah, Gettleman's had success. He's been in the NFL for decades. And he was right to defend himself. And he said, hey, we'll find out in 3 years if I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And guess what? This is a guy that they know, too. They have an insight into this that a lot of people don't. Eli Manning and David Cutcliffe are very close.
Mm-hmm.
The Cutcliffe family and the Manning family are very close. The college coach had an insight into this kid and the Giants. I bet you the Giants had more information on him than any team in the league.
There's no question. And when I look at Daniel Jones, good skill set. We know this. He got beat around at Duke.
Yeah, that's not a good football team.
It's not a good football team. And they play in arguably the best conference in college football. I know people kind of connect that with the SEC. You can make a strong argument that the best conference in college football is the ACC. You can make a strong argument.
You could. You very well could. And it's a guy at 6'5", 230, highly intelligent.
Highly intelligent.
There is a lot of good tools
with this kid.
He don't have to play right away, which is another advantage. And let's talk about this, too. You're in a unique position with Dave Gettleman, knowing that Manning's at the back end of his career, and he had other capital. Mm-hmm. He had another pick.
Yep.
So he needed to get his quarterback. And if that's his guy, and nobody's calling at number six, why wouldn't you take him?
Well, and again, you just mentioned you have that draft capital, okay? So the next pick at 17, they go Dexter Lawrence, defensive tackle out of Clemson. That is an extremely safe pick. Extremely safe pick.
Yes.
Again, people will argue you could have got Dexter Lawrence in the back half of the first round. Look, Dexter Lawrence is an extremely safe pick. He will be a difference maker for the Giants at nose tackle. There's no question about that. He will.
And they love B.J. Hill, last year's pick at three technique.
There you go.
And we talk about this all the time, and a lot of people don't follow the draft like we do, Jordan. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people don't get into it like we do. But the floor. The floor is a word that gets thrown around a bunch by the NFL, and most people don't understand that. And what they mean by that is the floor is how bad could a kid be? Not the ceiling of how good he could be. So there's a lot of people that say, hey, you know, this kid has a low ceiling but a high floor, which means that's a safe pick.
And that's what Lawrence is.
And that's what Lawrence is. You know from day one, his floor is he's going to walk in and play two downs and dominate the run game.
Yep.
Maybe he doesn't dominate the pass game. Maybe he gets that way. Maybe they see the ceiling is higher. But the floor is very, very, very safe pick, like you say. So, and with Jones, I don't understand the craze about, you know, you're reaching for a quarterback. You have to. If you don't have a quarterback, you don't have anything in this league.
Yeah, and I don't think it was a reach because
You had a guy graded that you loved, you had insight on, and you have an aging veteran, you know it's not going to be around forever, and can help him. I don't understand why people didn't like this pick.
Three quarterbacks received first-round grades. Three quarterbacks. We know this now. Daniel Jones, right? Dwayne Haskins,
and Kyler Murray.
Yep. All right, so you had your pick of two quarterbacks out of the three that received first-round grades, and you went with a guy that you were familiar with. Now, I could even go beyond the Lawrence and the Jones pick and talk about DeAndre Baker, which I loved as well.
That was a great pick.
I love the DeAndre Baker pick as well because, again, if we're talking about conferences, because people love that in college football, Georgia has been dominant defensively. Who was their number one defensive back over the last two seasons?
Baker.
It was DeAndre Baker.
Yep.
And you get a number one defensive back, a guaranteed difference maker in Dexter Lawrence defensively, and I promise you, that is the safest pick, one of the safest picks of the first round. Clemson, any defensive player that went in the first round for Clemson to me was a safe pick. Christian Wilkins.
Those kids know how to play.
They do.
They know how to play.
They know how to play. So, again, I love that pick with Dexter Lawrence. I love the Baker pick. Yeah, I can defend the New York Giants. I don't believe the Giants flubbed up. And I had to laugh. I was listening to some sports talk radio over the weekend. And as the analysts continue to pile on Gettleman, they actually bring up that they let Sam Darnold fall to the Jets last season. They took Saquon Barkley.
The guy's a Hall of Famer. Look, early in his career, you could see this guy in gold.
He is Marshall Faulk.
He's incredible.
That's who he reminds me of.
He is great.
And so you passed on Sam Darnold for a reason. This guy is a once-in-a-generation type talent.
Absolutely.
The Giants have had, to me, the Giants were great last year. I don't think you could have passed up on Barkley at number two. This year you take Jones. I'm fine with him taking Jones. I really am. I'm fine with the Lawrence pick. I love the Baker pick. I thought the Giants did fine. Now, stepping away from the Giants, let's talk about the Washington Redskins because I don't think things could have worked out any better for them. I know you love Montez Sweat. They trade back into the first round. They get Sweat at 26, if I remember
26,
right.
26, yeah.
And then they also draft Dwayne Haskins, so they get their quarterback, and they get a guy that just a month and a half ago was projected to be a top 10 pick.
Oh, absolutely. This guy, and there's some information we're getting now that he might be misdiagnosed. There may be nothing wrong with him. And this guy can flat move now, mm-hmm. Jordan. He ran a 4.4.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the Sweat pick. They're going to run that aggressive, a guy we're familiar with, or I am, Greg Minuski. He's an old Charger defensive coordinator. In fact, I've talked to him at practice before. He's aggressive. You put him on the other side of Ryan Kerrigan and that pass rush there. They got Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne on the front. The Redskins are looking like their pass rush is really coming on.
And I
love that pick. And Haskins, too. And I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm fine with Haskins' pick as well.
I love the fact that he can sit there, and I like Case Keenum as a placeholder.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
so you don't have to rush Haskins. You don't have to.
Keenum will be the starter day one.
But you don't have to rush Haskins.
No, you don't.
And so he fell right in their lap. They didn't have to move up. They didn't have to move down. Everything worked out for them. I thought they had a home run. I'm with you. I love the Redskins' first two picks.
I love what the Redskins have done. And really, if you go back over the last two drafts, I've been fine with Washington. I think they've actually drafted quite well over the last two
Jonathan
years.
Allen, Daron Payne.
Yeah.
This team has some talent. There's no doubt about it.
We talked about earlier on in the show a team that we didn't like in the Detroit Lions, and I kind of want to stray away from the teams that we didn't like because there's so many positives to talk about. The Miami Dolphins, and you and I did have a lot of conversations about the Dolphins leading up to the draft because of Brian Flores, and again, we were waiting for that domino to fall. We knew he was going to become the head coach of the Dolphins, got a late jump on everything because you have to wait until the end of the Super Bowl. I thought that at first, if Kyler Murray's there, that's Flores' guy because it's Kyler Murray. I mean, how often do you see a quarterback this athletic fall that deep? Once Kingsbury got the job, it seemed like it was a long shot. And you and I had talked about that multiple times as well. Miami passes on Haskins. They trade a second rounder. They get Rosen. And then they draft a kid that we had the pleasure of talking to last week in Christian Wilkins. I fell in love with this kid. And again, I'm going back to Dabo and Clemson. It's a safe pick if you take anyone on that defensive front because it's one of the greatest defensive fronts we have seen in modern era of college football.
They Absolutely.
Were that dominant.
Yeah, they were great.
Okay, and just listening to Christian Wilkins talk, if you missed the show last week, you can archive that show at castlecountryradio.com. I love this kid.
When Dabo Swinney tells you this kid is so impressive, he could be president of the United States, that's how much he loves Christian Wilkins. You're talking Dabo. So this is the guy that's in the national title. He's one of the top coaches in the world right now.
Yeah, maybe.
And he loved that kid.
Maybe.
He loves that kid.
Yeah.
And you needed help, and he fell in your lap. You traded the 62nd pick in the draft for a guy that went in the top 10 last year?
Yeah.
That's highway robbery.
Yeah.
That's highway robbery.
Two and a five is what they gave up for
that
Rosen.
That is a home run for the Dolphins. And we've piled on the Dolphins. Let's be honest.
Yeah, we have.
And I still think they're the worst roster in the NFL.
I agree.
But we piled on, and they're starting to put it in there. They're putting their plan in place. And I think they did a great job. I think they were patient. They let Rosen fall to them. Now, I think Arizona handled that poorly. But that's a different story. But Miami let that fall right in their lap. They needed help at D-tackle. They got a high-character leader guy. They need those. They got a highly intelligent guy, which Brian Flores needs. I thought they hit a home run.
I agree.
Of course, there's a lot of home runs.
There are, right after
the draft ends.
Rashawn Gary going to the Packers again. I love that. I love Gary going 12 to the Packers. Now that some of the trades, though, are finalized, and I want to piggyback off of the whole Rosen deal, let me throw this trade out there to you, and you tell me, who came out on top? Okay, so we'll start with the Giants and the Browns trade. So the Browns get Odell Beckham. The Giants get Jabril Peppers, Dexter Lawrence, O'Shane Zimenez, the kid from Old Dominion, standing 6'3", 253 pounds, defensive end. So you get an edge rush as well. Plus you get the cap space that you're giving up in the trade, getting rid of Odell. Who wins that deal?
Well, if Odell plays great, he stays healthy, both teams. If Odell causes problems and him and Mayfield have issues and Cleveland is Cleveland, as they usually are, let's hope they're not. We're both rooting for Cleveland, then the Giants. But I think you both win. That's a win-win for everybody, right? You got a guy that's giving you trouble. You got a guy that maybe didn't fit in New York because he had too much, what's the word we want to use here, scrutiny, pressure, whatever. Maybe didn't mesh with Manning as much. So Gettleman says, well, I can get something for him, makes it happen. He's got a quarterback. He's got himself in the first round, he gets a quarterback with his pick. He gets a space heater that he wants in D-line. He loves big men.
And I think that
a pass rusher. And Jabril Peppers, which helps. They needed help at safety because they saved the money getting rid of Landon Collins.
And Peppers has been okay. He hasn't been great. Yeah. He's been okay.
That's a pretty good football player,
though. He's not a bad football player, no. And I also think that in acquiring that 17th pick overall, that allowed you to take Jones at 6.
Yeah, that's part of the equation.
It is. Right, because again, I'm going back to the safe pick here with Dexter Lawrence, right? I mean, you can, I hate to use the word reach because I don't think that Jones is a reach. I really don't.
No.
But it allows you to reach when you have a safe pick at 17.
And that's your guy. It doesn't matter when you're picking. If that's your guy, then take your guy. And Gettleman's a strong guy. Gettleman's a strong personality. So he's not going to be bullied or pushed around into something he don't want to do. That was his guy, and he's going for it.
Here's a trade that looks pretty lopsided now, and I think that the Browns win this one hands down now that it's complete, okay? It's the Browns-Dolphins deal that was done last year for Jarvis Landry. Okay, so The Browns get Landry. The Dolphins get Durham Smythe, tight end out of Notre Dame.
That's who they took last year.
That's who they took last year.
Okay.
This year's seventh round pick was Miles Gaskins. Browns win that trade.
Yeah, absolutely. Landry was great for the Browns. He helped turn that thing around.
And I like Gaskins. I like Gaskins.
And so it was a fourth and seventh, right?
It was a four and a seven.
It's four and a seven. And, you know, again, when you're Miami, you weren't going to pay Landry the money. So that has to be figured into it because the cap space, you're going to be figured into it. Now, when you say that, Jordan, the new regime has to spend that money.
Yeah, you got
to. And they have to spend it because that's part of the equation when you go into these trades for guys you're not going to pay. Then you got to spend that money. So we kept talking about the Raiders. We beat it to death. Then we're going to pay Khalil Mack. Well, then they got to pay people.
You got to.
Which they did.
They did.
They spent a lot of money.
They did. Went out and got Trent Brown, LaMarcus Joyner.
They spent a lot of money. So that's part of the equation in these trades is your money. So for the Dolphins, they got to spend some money. And the Browns, you know, hey, they got a great player in Landry, and they're happy with him.
Cowboys, Raiders. Cowboys get Amari Cooper. We now know the Raiders, they get Jonathan Abram, safety. That was with the 27th pick overall in the first round of this draft. We all praised that trade at one particular time. Cooper looked pretty good for the Cowboys. The Raiders spent a lot of money with LaMarcus Joyner in the offseason. You got to complement these pieces at some point in time, right? You have to.
And Abram was a highly rated player.
He was.
He was a highly rated player. That was one, though, that I had to kind of think through. Now, I didn't say I hated that pick. I had to think through because you've been praising Carl Joseph a couple years ago. He was a first rounder.
Yeah.
And you just picked really, the same guy?
Yep.
So what's the plan? So that's one of those where you don't say, I hate the pick, but then you think to yourself, okay, explain to me what the plan is. Mayock, what do you got? What's in store here? But, again, good trade for both teams. Cooper was lights out for the Cowboys.
He wasn't for the Raiders.
And they got a first rounder out of the deal.
Yeah. I will end with this one. The Raiders get Antonio Brown. The Steelers now get Deontay Johnson, who they selected in the third round, 66th overall, and tight end Zach Gentry, who they took in the fifth round, 141 overall. That trade looks pretty lopsided, but in addition by subtraction, I still like it for the Steelers.
You still
I
have
really
to
do.
Take that trade.
Yeah.
You have to take that trade. And again, the Steelers were in a tough spot because nobody wanted to give anything up for Antonio Brown. He made it so miserable they knew he couldn't be there, and they got him for nothing. Let's be honest, third and fifth. But again, the Steelers, they're going to save a lot of money.
Yeah, no doubt.
And they've got to spend that money now.
No doubt.
Le'Veon and Antonio left a ton of money for you. Make it work. Now, the Steelers don't get that money this year. They get it next year, Jordan, but that's a lot of money they got.
A lot of money.
And they got to spend it.
That trade's still an eye for incomplete.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, still is. Out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Of course, it's always a blast to get you in the studio, Vinny. We're going to continue on the conversation on the podcast, Bolts and Horns. You can listen to that on iTunes and, of course, at CastleCountryRadio.com. Vinny, we'll do it again next Tuesday.
Perfect.
All right. That's going to do it for us. NASCAR Live is coming up next. Have a terrific Tuesday. Be safe. We are out.